Okay, so today we'll finish up some things about pipelining. And last time we got to the idea of forwarding. Remember, forwarding is this idea that we would read the wrong value in our pipeline because of a hazard, because some other instruction in our pipeline had the correct version of that value, it was computing on it, but it wasn't available yet from where we were reading it from. And often we found out, not always, but often, that the correct value was already computed somewhere. That somewhere elsewhere in the pipeline, you know, we already had the value, and if only we could use that version of the value instead of whatever we got from, say, the register file, we would be better off. And the idea of forwarding is that that's what we're going to do. We're going to add a wire from wherever the value is to where we need it, typically after the register file read, but not always. And we're going to substitute that for the wrong value that we have otherwise. And since we need to make a decision about whether is the value in that other place from the future instruction or not, we need a mux. And that mux is going to decide whether we use the shortcut or not. So given what we know about pipelining, we should be able to better answer one of the quiz questions we had, which most people had trouble with, which is about forwarding in this example. So here we have I remove Q followed by add Q. And this needs forwarding because this R8 here is going to be needed by the add, and it's set by the I remove Q. If add just naturally reads R8 in its decode step, the I remove Q wouldn't have written it back. So we need some forwarding to happen. And the logical place for that forwarding to happen, the place that the quiz question told you to assume it happened, is during the decode stage of the add instruction. And in this case, we're going to get the value conceptually from the end of the execute stage of the I remove Q instruction and get it to the end of the decode stage in the add instruction. And in this case, you know, that's going to be that 50, which originally came from the instruction memory. And that's not where we're going to get it from, because something else is using the instruction memory, so it's not going to have the value from this I remove Q instruction. We're not going to get it from the decode stage, where it was passed after being in the instruction memory through the pipeline registers between fetch and decode, because the add Q instruction is using those registers now. So instead, it's going to be stored by the pipeline registers, which handled the transition from decode to execute. So it's being stored at the time of the forwarding by the registers between decode and execute, and the value is going to be needed later on in the write-back stage of the I remove Q instruction. So it's going to be input to the registers between execute and memory. That's not where we're actually going to get the value from, because it's not in those registers yet. It's not going to be there until the next rising edge of the clock, which is later than we want to do forwarding in this picture. So it's in fact the output of the decode execute registers, which is the correct answer to that quiz question. So any questions about this? And so if you remember, our basic forwarding conceptual idea was we had these muxes. And last time we talked about how, in a typical example, we had all these forwarding paths we needed to add. And you're going to have the big job of adding that logic all over your HCL when you go from what you're doing now, which is implementing a single cycle version of the processor, to a multi-cycle pipeline. And the basic form of the logic is that you do this sort of thing. You say, okay, what register am I trying to read? And I look later on in the pipeline for instructions before me that are using that register. And I say, are you about to write to the register I'm trying to read? If so, let me take the value you already computed for that. And when we got all through with this, we had sort of two cases where we needed to stall when all things were over. Most of the time, we had all these hazards. all these funny hazards, and we just handle them mostly by forwarding. So in most cases, we had these data hazards where an instruction would use a value within a couple cycles of another instruction using a value, and that you often was a data hazard. So we had data hazards all over the place, but almost all of them are solved by forwarding. We have this one case where a data hazard wasn't, which is when we had a memory output which was needed by executing the following cycle. In that case, forwarding didn't solve our problem. We had our, you know, we would need to forward from the end of memory to execute. That's too late. We don't want to make the execute stage take, you know, longer by trying to forward to the beginning. So we're going to need to, in this case, choose to stall. So our solution was to stall. That was our remaining stall for a data hazard. And we had one remaining stall after branch prediction for a control hazard, which was for a rat. So all this pipelining we added to our processor has some cost. And you know, ideally, we'd be getting exactly 5 times as much performance. That we take a program, and this processor is 5 times faster because we were dividing the work into 5 pieces. So it's not going to be quite that well good. And part of the reason is that even though we've gotten rid of most of our data hazards, most of our control hazards as far as having an effect on the number of cycles we take, we still have some stalls. So there's some amount of stalls in a program. The biggest source is how many returns are executed. We also added a bunch of logic to implement all this forwarding. And that logic is probably going to add a little bit to our cycle time. So even though we're not taking more cycles, probably we take a little bit of extra time because all these muxes we added need time to work. It's probably a lot less time than a memory operation, and often it's not even on a critical path. Like if the memory stage is much slower than our register read, then it's probably not going to matter how many muxes we add to the decode stage. But it's all this logic probably will add a little bit of time to our cycle time. But it's definitely worth it because for a typical program, when you write assembly programs, you had hazards all over the place probably. It's really hard to write a program which doesn't have a whole bunch of data hazards that forwarding would solve. So we've made typical programs faster in terms of the number of cycles. That will easily make up for even a 10 or 20% difference in the cycle time. So any questions about sort of our overall pipelining idea? Things we saw pipelining. Okay. So first I'll briefly mention, so last time I'd like to remind you so that we sometimes have, remember this example, we had multiple forwarding paths here. We have three instructions here, which all use R8. Yeah, you could forward the value from the first to the last, but that's not the actual up-to-date version of the value. And an observation you should make here is that this instruction here doesn't depend on that instruction. This instruction at the bottom, the last one, doesn't depend on the first one, really, because you have to go through the middle. It's not a direct dependency. You don't actually, there's no reason to do forwarding between it. But you need to handle this case when you actually implement your processor. Okay. So we talked about hazards and dependencies, and we didn't really take the time to precisely define what we mean by the two terms. And this was another thing that there was a lot of problems with on the quiz. So a dependency is purely based on what do the instructions say to do. So we don't need to know how we're implementing the instructions to talk about dependencies. It's just, does the result of it of this get used in this other thing? That's when we say two instructions have a dependency on each other. So if one uses the result of the other, that's a dependency. And a hazard is about, will it work in some particular pipeline? So we need to know what sort of pipeline we're using. And we say it's about will it work before we do anything to quote unquote resolve hazards. So will it work without forwarding, without stalling, without branch prediction, etc. Before we do any of that extra stuff, like if we do nothing extra, would it work in that pipeline design? Does it just work naturally? And these are different questions that will have, you know, some dependencies will not cause hazards. Yes?
What's an example of a dependency that doesn't cause a hazard?
So there will be one on the next slide. But what is a hazard importantly depends on our pipeline. So if we ask you about a different sort of pipeline than our five-stage one, and there's many different types of pipelines that real processor designers have toyed with, depending on what sort of trade-offs they have with cycle time versus how long many cycles instructions will take. They'll have different hazards. So as a bit of an exercise on dependencies and hazards, here's a bunch of instructions. And there are some dependencies between these instructions. And some of those dependencies are hazards. And some of those hazards can be resolved with forwarding. So your goal is to hopefully write down or type up where you think the dependencies are, which ones of those are actually hazards, and you know whether the ones which are hazards can be resolved with forwarding. And for this question, I only care about data dependencies and hazards, not control dependencies and hazards. And when you have something written down, I recommend checking with your neighbor to see if you actually agree on the answer. Posting the slides, problem. Seeing people looking at that. Okay, who thinks they have most of the dependencies and hazards figured out? Who thinks they don't? Okay. So probably a majority, so I'll start. You can, so my general strategy for figuring out dependencies, so I take an instruction, I look at where does this output go? So this add instruction, it puts its output in RBX. So I say, okay, so I need to look for RBX being used after this. And the first place I see it used is here. It's read from the add queue. So that's a dependency. So then I need to figure out, is this dependency actually a hazard? And to figure that out, I say, okay, when would we naturally read RBX in add queue? Well, we do that when this last add queue here is in decode. And when that add queue is in decode, the previous add queue is in execute, the arrow move queue is in memory, and the sub queue is in write back. And the first instruction where our dependency came from is out of the pipeline. So it's finished its write back stage, which means that when this instruction naturally, just normally reads RBX, it will have the correct value. So this is an example where there's a dependency between these two instructions, but it's not a hazard in our five-stage pipeline. If we had a longer pipeline, it might be a hazard. But in our pipeline, it's not. We don't do anything to handle this. Yes?
Can we forward that value?
So we can't forward, there's no reason to forward the value because there's not anywhere in the pipeline to find it because this instruction is completely out of the pipeline. So, and I just follow that procedure for every instruction. I say, okay, I look at the next instruction, look at its output, and keep going. So one thing that's worth noting is that an instruction depends on another instruction when the output of the first instruction is used as input to the second. So this add queue and sub queue, even though they both use RAX, don't depend on each other. They both read the same value. That's not a dependency between the instructions. There could be a third instruction above this that they both depend on, but they don't depend on each other. Yeah?
I'm sorry, what were you saying about the last add queue? You said it was in the decode?
All instructions in our pipeline read the register file during decode. So it's going to be in decode at the time we care about. Which is, we need to see when it reads the registers normally, what value is it reading? So then I can look at this subqueue. The subqueue writes to RCX. And you might say, okay, so that means I can look at this IR move queue. That uses RCX, so is there a dependency?
No,
so why not? So because we're writing to RCX and not reading from it. So we don't care, IR move queue doesn't care what's in RCX. So it doesn't depend on the subqueue. The subqueue can operate independently. And since the IR move queue writes to RCX, this add queue does not depend on the subqueue. So this write to RCX breaks, you know, any dependencies that would otherwise happen. So there's no dependency between subqueue and add queue, but there is one between IR move queue and add queue. So that IR move queue writes 100 to RCX, and we expect the add queue following to read that 100. But we don't know whether that's going to happen until we look at the pipeline. So I'm going to do the same procedure I did for the last instruction to see if this is a hazard. I'm going to say, okay, this add queue that's reading RCX is going to be in decode. That means the instruction before it, the IR move queue, is going to be in execute. And that's where the value came from. And it's not written to the register file by execute finishing, or by execute running, which means that it won't be up to date, which means it's a hazard. So that tells us it's a hazard. Then we need to figure out, can we resolve it with forwarding? So this IR move queue is in execute, and we need to say, well, can we find this value 100 somewhere to forward it? And the value 100 comes from the instruction memory. That was available as early as the fetch stage. So it's definitely available by execute. So yes, we can fix it with forward. And there's one more dependency in hazard. So I go to this add queue instruction. It writes to R10. And between and the next instruction reads and writes R10. So that's another dependency. And we can do the same analysis and find out that, well, this is a hazard too, because when this when this last add is in decode, the one before it is in execute. It hasn't gone to write back yet. So we need to forward from execute to decode in order for this R10 value that the second to last add creates to be used by the last add. Okay. Any questions on this example? Okay, so given our time. So I have another example, another exercise, which should go quicker now that you hopefully see the sort of systematic way of doing this, and we'll go through that example. Yeah. Yeah, so we can, all of these hazards we can fix with forwarding. So there's one type of hazard in our pipeline which we found out we couldn't, which was the memory, where we wanted to forward from the end of memory to the beginning of encode and execute at the same time, right? Where we wanted to use a value and execute after we read it from memory. That was the one case we couldn't do forwarding in our pipeline. But I would recommend just knowing the more general procedure, because it's good to know what other pipelines might do. It sounds like a question we might ask on a test. So you should know how to just figure it out by seeing what stage is each instruction in. Okay, so the second example. And I forgot a parentheses. Sorry. So let's start by working our way through this example. I don't have actual weaver lines drawn prepared, so I will do this the other way, which is by, and did I forget? I can see slides. And I forgot the, so our first dependency is between these first two instructions. We have RBX, which is read by move queue, and this is written by the move queue and read by the subsequent instruction. And this is the one case we could, which is both a dependency and a hazard, and we cannot resolve with forwarding. So here we have dependency, RBX, and a stall. Then we have a JNE. So this is a control hazard, because as on this add queue. So control hazard on add queue, because it depends on the condition codes. And that's something we resolve with branch prediction. So then we have this add queue, and we can look at this second add instruction. It writes to RCX, and this foo add queue reads from RCX. So it, in fact, there is a dependency between these two instructions, and it is one which is not resolved by resolved naturally, so it's a hazard. It's a hazard because, in fact, when this add queue instruction is in decode, when it's being speculatively executed by the jump, then this, then we have execute, then memory. So we haven't finished write back for the first add. And finally, we have a dependency on between the add and the move on RDX. So this is a hazard. And it's resolved with forwarding. We forward from, we forward to the execute stage of the memory instruction, not to memory, because we got the address that we need to compute, and we still add zero, even though it's zero. But we but we need forwarding for this. I believe that's all the examples in here. Anyone, did I miss any of the dependencies? Okay, so that. Okay, so I'd note that, so we've been looking at our particular five-stage pipeline. This is what you're going to implement, so you probably care more about it. But different pipelines are going to have different hazards. So like we could imagine a four-stage pipeline. If we just combine our executed memory stages, we decided that was a better trade-off for some reason. Which probably wouldn't be, but maybe we decide that. In that case, we have this dependency from R8 to R8, from add to and. And that's always a dependency. When we, to see if it's a dependency, we don't care what the pipeline looks like. But it's a hazard in our five-stage pipeline. This add instruction will be finishing up its write to the register file at the point in time when the and is trying to read the value, so it won't read the up-to-date version unless we do forwarding. But with a four-stage pipeline, it will already have finished its write, and it won't be a hazard. And if you have to figure out if it's a hazard, this is the sort of procedure I recommend. Just say, what's going to go on in whatever strange pipeline you have in front of you when these instructions are executed. And similarly, you can have other pipelines can introduce hazards we haven't seen. So when you have a longer pipeline, we're going to have more hazards. So we might say, imagine that we think that our execute instruction is expensive, and we want to split the execute into two parts. So let's say we do that and assume values aren't available to the end of the second part of execute, because why would we split it if they were available after the first one? And we can say, well, what's going to happen in a case like this? And the natural thing is to imagine that, okay, so I have this sequence of instructions, and I have dependencies from this first instruction to both of these other instructions through R9. And if I wanted to figure out what's going on, you might actually fill out this picture. So I start by saying, let's do the natural thing and say, okay, this second add, it's going to start its fetch in cycle 1, then decode, then execute 1, execute 2, memory, write back. So I look at that and I say, okay, and it needs to read R9 by the end of, before it starts with execute. And that needs to come from the previous instruction. So I can draw on this picture, where would that forwarding path be? And I see, well, that's a problem because we haven't finished up execute. And that means that in this other pipeline design, we would need to stall in this case, even with forwarding. And because we stall this instruction, the following instruction is also going to be stalled because, as far as we know, we have to execute instructions in order. We're going to swap them. So we'll actually, we'll do forwarding to resolve this, but we'll do forwarding and stalling to resolve this hazard in this pipeline, just like we did for load use hazards in our five cycle pipeline. And so any questions about this sort of how you reason about other pipelines to figure out where hazards are, when you have to stall? So everyone, yeah.
Why are we stalling between the second and third instruction?
So we aren't. So the stall, we're, the way I've written this picture is that the second instruction is stalling in decode instead of fetch. So if we stalled in fetch, then this instruction would just start later. And either is a correct implementation. It might make more sense to stall in decode because conceptually you might not want to have the circuitry which detects you need to stall until then. Until you've done some processing of like register numbers and instruction types. Other questions? Okay, so a final note on debugging pipelines. So I'm going to talk a little bit about advice for debugging pipelines, mainly because this is a big, big sink on TA time later on in this class when we have assignments that involve making pipeline processors, and we get the sense that people aren't so great at it. So my recommended procedures when you have to debug pipelines, and most people often do not do most of these steps, which is why I'm saying them, is first, draw a picture, like one of those diagrams I had, like with fetch, decode, execute, memory, write back for each instruction, something like that for the state of what should be happening in what you're implementing. I at least find this useful when people come to my office hours. This is usually one of the first things I tell them to do. And I think it's helpful figuring out what you should be doing and also letting you know where you should be looking in your debug output to figure out if something's going wrong. Also, about debug output, get it. And I strongly recommend redirecting to a file. You can do this with the greater than sign, and opening that file rather than like trying to scroll up in your terminal and while still typing commands in it on occasion. It's really awkward, but I see people do it anyways. And just systematically, when you see a broken instruction, check each stage in the debug output. See what are the intermediate values. What's val E? What's val A? Does it match what you expect? And expect that most of your annoying bugs are probably forward or hazard handling problems of some sort, either forwarding or stall logic or squashing logic being wrong. And secondly, I've repeated draw the pipeline stages because really, you should do that. But also, don't be afraid to make your own test cases. Yes, we supply a whole bunch of .yo files that you can run your processor with, but you should make your own test cases when you think something is wrong. In particular, if you're, worried that, some instruction might be interfering with another because of forwarding, you can test for that by like replacing it with a NOP and seeing if that changes things. And I would recommend doing that. You can get better test cases. So please do that. Lots of people seem afraid to do anything that involves making new .yo files. But you can do it, and it's really helpful for figuring out like whether forwarding might be involved here. Does this other instruction being in the pipeline cause the problem? Okay, and that's all I have, and I'll turn it over to Samira.